This podcast contains mature themes and situations. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and performed by P.G. Holyfield. Well, hot damn, we are finally here. This is P.G. Holyfield, and welcome to episode one of the Murder at Avedon Hill podcast novel. Thanks to everyone that subscribed back in March and April and have waited patiently for the official podcast to start. Over the last few weeks, I finished editing the second full draft of the novel. Right now, I'm holding the first proof copy of the novel from Lulu.com, and let me tell you, it is a powerful thing. The novel's not ready for prime time just yet. I'm making some interior art changes, and I'll be going through it one more time to address some minor edits missed the last time through. And I'll get to that soon enough. A special thanks to everyone that emailed me and Skyped me over the last 2 months, asking me to get my ass in gear. It has been amazing to watch the numbers of subscribers go up simply based on the content of the T-minus episodes. Hopefully I haven't lost anybody because of the delay, but completing the second draft of the novel was an important achievement for me, and I'm still smiling about it today. While I dedicated the novel to my wife, Liza, I'm dedicating this podcast to someone I haven't spoken to in nearly 20 years, my high school English and drama teacher, Debbie Scott. Everyone has an example of someone from their youth that pushed them through the door towards creativity, towards going after their dreams, and building self-confidence. Debbie Scott did that for me. She was both my teacher and one of my first true adult friends. She was someone that possessed a childlike exuberance for literature and drama, an enthusiasm that was infectious to everyone around her. I'm still pretty much a shy, introverted person, but her belief in me at such an important time in my life provided me the foundation that allows me to tackle this podcast today. So thank you, Mrs. Scott, for everything. A quick note about the beginning of each chapter. In the novel, at the start of each chapter is an icon, an emblem representing a member of the Pantheon of Cairn, also known as the Children of Osh. For those interested, on the Murder at Avedon Hill website at pgholyfield.com, there's a page describing each of the 11 children, and during the novel, several of the Children of Osh are explained in greater detail. In addition, in the novel below each one of these images is a short quotation. It may be a snippet of prophecy, a line or two from a religious text or a play or a fable, all of which deals with the history of Cairn or the prophesizing of future events in some capacity. The idea is that Murder at Avedon Hill is a small story being played out on one small corner of a much larger stage, and hopefully the chapter quotes provide a connection between both the plot in the novel and the larger events that are taking place throughout Cairn. This first episode covers the prologue and chapter one. Today's guest reader is the wonderfully talented Leanne Mabry from the Tag in the Scene podcast, reading the part of Greta Platt. Following the reading and after a promo or two, I'll be back to talk more about guest readers and some other news. But right now, it's time. Murder at Avedon Hill by P.G. Holyfield. Prologue. Greta. The icon of Colin, child of destruction. Too much the heavens weep for the maiden lost, or nothing and everything considering the cost. From the Second Collected Prophecies of Iberian, Book 1, verses 245-246. Thank you. Greta Platt sat on a well-crafted stone bench in the southern quarter of the open courtyard. The courtyard was her place of refuge, a sanctuary from the hustle and bustle of her position as the house mistress of Avedon Manor. She still worked, as was her way, writing in a large journal that rested on her lap. Greta wore a simple linen dress. The powder blue material lay tight against her legs, allowing Greta to easily balance the bulky yet lightweight journal. Greta owned many dresses that exhibited her beauty, but she always chose function over elegance when it came to her work apparel. If you asked anyone in Avedon Hill, they would describe Greta as the most beautiful girl in town. This would immediately be followed by, "Of course you're not including Sarah Tremaine, are you? Sarah might be the most beautiful woman in all of Cairn." Comparisons notwithstanding, Greta's golden locks and topaz-flecked gray eyes were enough to turn any man's head. But her position as the housemistress of Avedon Manor kept the men in town from staring longer than they should. Greta raised her eyes from her journal. She lifted her chin and spied Mount Olviar to the northeast. The architecture of the central courtyard and the surrounding manor never ceased to amaze Greta. The more than 400 years of ivy growth, the ancient oak trees around which the manor had been constructed, the Lantis mountain range filling the horizon just above the nearly hidden courtyard walls. One could easily forget they were enclosed by stone and mortar. Greta sighed. She allowed her eyes to wander to the left, to a high spot on the windowless northern wall of the courtyard.
"How did it come to this, Lord Avedon? Mother would know what to do."
Greta blinked in an attempt to direct her thoughts back to the day-to-day events of Avedon Hill. The sun had fled to the west, escaping the Grotian skies above Avedon Hill, but Greta had installed lanterns in the courtyard that allowed her to enjoy the gardens while continuing her work. She read out loud as she wrote,
"Talik wants to meet with me about a carnival he wants to bring to town this winter. He thinks it will attract visitors to Avedon Hill and to his inn, and give the townspeople something to enjoy while the pass is closed for the season. Aj, help me. The man just doesn't get it."
She wrote for a time, and then turned the page.
"Father Joris wants me to arrange another audience with Lord Avedon, and to convince my lord to take his warnings more seriously." "Not now, Joris. You chose the wrong time for one of your rants about undead threats rising in Cairn."
Greta shook her head and continued writing in her journal.
"Jilly asked me to go on a picnic with her to our grove east of town. Has it been long enough? Should I chance it?"
Greta heard something in the distance, what her mind translated as the snap of a twig or small branch. She instinctively turned her head towards the noise, watching for movement in the meticulously landscaped garden. For the next few moments, the only sound she heard was the water flowing through the fountain several paces to her left, and the breeze drifting through the trees of the courtyard.
"The wind carries all sorts of sounds over these walls."
She stared at the area for a time, at the trees and tall shrubs cared for so lovingly by the manor groundskeeper. When viewed from the only balcony window that overlooked the courtyard, the trees and shrubbery formed intricate patterns. Her mother once told her that the patterns represented Aj and his children. But no matter how long she stared at the gardens from above, she just couldn't see it. Greta found herself staring at the few remaining leaves twisting on their branches, holding on to their last moments of life. The simple act of gazing at the leaves made Greta shiver.
"Winter is nearly here again."
The sound forgotten, Greta turned back to her journal.
"Herjar's reputation has grown. He again seeks permission to sell his wares to shops in Ilion and Tax." "Impressive, Herjar. It took you less than 10 years to surpass your master in craftsmanship. Maybe it's time to send the blacksmith on his way. Give Aulis an opportunity to run the smithy."
The young housemistress turned her thoughts to the problem that rested most heavily on her mind.
What am I going to do with you? What if Marissa is wrong about..."
Greta's journal flew into the air as she was suddenly snatched from the bench and slammed face first into the ground. A strong hand reached around the left side of her head and clamped her mouth shut. Greta struggled, but with a speed beyond the woman's understanding, the unseen figure was on top of her, knee in her back, driving her hard into the dirt. With her right arm pinned beneath her, Greta used her left hand as best she could to pull at her attacker's arm. At the same time, she tried to open her mouth and bite the hand holding back her screams, but her assailant seemed to sense this. The vice-like hand squeezed harder until Greta's vision began to blur from the pain. Realizing she didn't have the strength to pull her assailant's arm away from her, Greta began clawing at it, digging with her nails, but this only seemed to intensify her attacker's resolve. With all of her waning strength, Greta flailed her legs, hoping to shake free of her attacker. A foot connected with her attacker's torso and thigh, but the blow elicited nary a sound. As surprising as this attack was to Greta, it paled in comparison to what happened next. Something solid struck Greta on the right side of her neck. Trapped as she was, the blow threatened to separate Greta's head from her body. She felt as if she had been hit by a hammer. But no blunt weapon she had ever seen could maintain contact with its target in a manner such as this. It was as if the weapon had attached itself to her neck without the benefit of paste or stitching. But she had no time to consider the possibilities, as her head began jerking to and fro in uncontrollable spasms. In moments, the violent paroxysm spread, racking her entire body with painful muscle contractions. Greta's head convulsed so brutally that she felt as if the back of her skull was actually touching her spine. Fully expecting to hear the bones within her neck snap as her head reached this impossible position, Greta can now see the downside-up face of her attacker, and focus just long enough to recognize the face.
No, not you.
Greta heard what she thought was the click of snapping teeth, followed by the sensation of something sharp and jagged entering the flesh of her neck. Greta immediately lost all feeling in her arms and legs. In a matter of moments, her convulsions ceased, allowing her to slump forward against the earth. Greta could not find her voice. Her senses retreated, seeping out of her like water from a cracked glass. Her sight was the last to go. But soon enough, darkness edged into her field of vision. As the everlasting shadows overcame her, the last thing Greta saw was a leaf falling, twisting beautifully as it traveled from its lifelong home to the cold courtyard floor.
No, not like this.
A short time later, Greta Platt's murderer stood over her.
I trusted you.
The power of Greta's innocent blood caused the figure to shake in near ecstasy. The killer retrieved Greta's journal and looked once more upon the corpse of the Abaddon Manor house mistress.
I now have what I need to destroy them all.
Confident no one had overheard Greta's failed struggle for life, the remarkably unbloodied figure stood quietly for a time, breathing in the mountain air. A raise of a hand extinguished the nearby lanterns. The courtyard was soon wrapped in a blanket of darkness.
That's better.
Greta Platt's slayer slowly exited the courtyard.
We'll see each other again very soon, Miss Greta.
Part 1. The Tears of Artus. Chapter 1. Arrival. The Icon of Eli, Child of Stone and Earth. Eli sits unmoving at the entrance of his great mountain. Eli, just like his earthly home, is never what he seems. Old Inaran Proverb. There are many locations in the land of Cairn that have had volumes of history and commentary written about them. The great libraries at Thorn's Way and Arion contain row after row of books detailing the events that define these towns, cities, and locales. The great leaders and historical figures of Cairn and its three provinces are forever linked through the places they lived and worked and battled and loved and died. Great wars have been waged, alliances have been forged, and discoveries have been made at these places, and the names of these monuments to Cairn's history live on in the thoughts and memories of all the people of the land. Avedon Hill is not one of these places. The Lantis Mountains are a range of peaks that stretch for hundreds of leagues in a northwesterly to southeasterly direction. Those traveling between you and Grosh allow for 2 to 3 weeks' travel around the Lantis Mountains, even more during the winter months. Avedon Hill's only claim on history is that nearly 500 years ago, a miner named Galen Avedon was granted permission by the Ossur Dwarf clan to begin mining at the base of Mount Olviar. And 20 years later, the Avedon Mining Company had built a tunnel and road through Mount Olviar to the northeastern edge of the Lantis Mountains. The Olviaran Pass saved travelers at least a week of travel. The settlement built around the southern entrance of the Olviaran Pass became known as Avedon Hill, and a member of the Avedon family has always governed the town and its inhabitants. Avedon Hill never grew beyond its fortified walls constructed for that first settlement over 400 years ago. A few townspeople and tradesmen live in Avedon Hill, and travelers, mostly merchants, are welcome to stay and visit before making the journey through the pass, though rarely does a trader choose to remain longer than a night in the quiet hamlet. Avedon Hill is a footnote, a place known by traders but rarely remembered, a town not often considered in even regional political circles, and certainly not a place written about in history books or mentioned in the biographies of Cairn's greatest figures. It was at the same town that Aramis Cragan now found himself, or more importantly, it was at the same town where Aramis Cragan now found himself on the wrong side of some particularly tall town gates. Aramis Cragan was a monk of the Aaronic Order. The Aaronic Order believes that even in a world filled with chaos and uncertainty, a group of lawful men and women can make a difference. Only a few within the order achieve the rank of Aaronic Advisor, chosen to act as counselors to one of the many leaders across Cairn. Aaronic Advisors are loyal to the men and women they are asked to counsel, no matter their faults. But most importantly, Aaronic Advisors are loyal to Cairn itself. During his younger years, Aramis Cragan had served the land as an Aaronic Advisor, one of the more renowned advisors of his day. But Aramis had retired to a more hermetic life before he had even turned 40. Now at 53, Aramis had entered a new phase of his life, gaining respect in certain circles as a scholar and as an interpreter of prophecy. His once full head of hair had thinned, auburn becoming more of a grayish white. Aramis's eyes, however, held a youthful quality that belied his years, even as the skin around his eyes wrinkled from the smile that was the trademark of his youth. Aramis was not a large man, but in his day, he had been considered formidable in battle. Years of training had focused his skills, leveraging his superior speed and balance, allowing him to easily outmatch most threats. No physical attributes, however, would allow Aramis Cragan to bypass the walls and town gate of Avedon Hill. Built into the lowest plateau of Mount Olviar, Avedon Hill required only a portion of the town to be cordoned off by walls. The remaining perimeter of the town was protected by the sheer rise of Mount Olviar, rock slides and generations of debris, a byproduct of the mining that had carved out the Olviaran Pass, had created a lengthy barrier between the furthest edges of the town wall and the nearly inaccessible mountainside. A band of thieves had once tried to scale the cliffs west of Avedon Hill and slip into Avedon Hill undetected. The screams of the only survivor, body broken on the rocks far short of the town wall, alerted the town guards to their failure. Bryce Avedon, lord of Avedon Hill at the time, placed a sign as close to the unrecoverable corpses as possible to commemorate the occasion. The former Aaronic advisor realized he had work ahead of him if he was going to gain access to the Olviaran Pass. Aramis was scheduled to chair a discussion of the fifth chapter of the Third Prophecies of Iberian at the Grotian capital of Kith Karn. The religious conference was to begin in 2 weeks. As a member of the Aaronic Order, Aramis owned little in the way of possessions. As a result, he always traveled by foot. Because of this, Aramis realized before he even started his journey that he wouldn't make it to the conference without access to the Olviaran Pass. Aramis sent word ahead to his cousin, Red, who had moved to Avedon Hill almost a year before. Aramis hoped his cousin might be able to help. Usually only those willing to pay a goodly sum were granted use of the Olviarin Pass. Aramis, sir, should we seek the gatekeeper? Aramis looked at his traveling companion, a young man of nearly 20 years of age. Aaron Perti's face was a theater of emotions, currently a mix of impatience and fatigue. Aramis trusted that one day, Aaron would develop the ability to conceal at least some of his emotions from public consumption. Aaron Perti stood more than a head taller than Aramis and still had a year or so of growth. The half year of exercise and training with Aramis had brought out more of the angular facial features of the Perti family, the square jaw, the high cheekbones, the way his jaw cut back from chin to neck in an upward angle. Aaron's shoulder-length blonde hair was pulled into a ponytail, the customary style of a page or valet. He dressed the part as well, with well-worn pants, vest, and cloak. Even the shirt he wore was more yellow than white. The sun hadn't yet reached mid-morning, but the two men had been walking since before dawn without rest. Aaron sensed the warmth and sustenance that would be found beyond the Avedon Hill town gates. He still carried his heavy load on his back, hoping they would soon reach an inn. Why is the gate even closed? Doesn't a town like this want travelers? Aaron accepted they would not be entering the town in the immediate future. He lowered his packs and sat on the largest one. Aramis considered the question. There could be several reasons. Even though we did not hear of any problems in this area of Grosh, there may be trouble with brigands that make camp in some of the forests along these roads. Or maybe there have been wild animals wandering into town looking for food. More than likely, the gates are closed simply because the Olviarin Pass is used much less this time of year. Have you ever used this pass? Aramis suspected that Aaron already knew the answer to this question. It was sort of a game for Aaron. A day wasn't complete until Aaron tried to get a story out of Aramis about his past. Yes, once, although Avedon Hill was the exit during that particular trip. Let us just say that at that time I did not seek permission to use the pass, and it was not a pleasant journey. Was this when you worked for my grandfather? Aramis smiled. Aaron, as I have stated many times before, an ironic advisor serves the land, not its rulers. Yes, sir. Aaron frowned at the possibly missed opportunity to hear a story about his own family. Aramis managed to hide a smile. Yes, Aaron, the only time I passed through this part of Grosh was as an ambassador for your grandfather. I am sure one day your mother will tell you all about it. Aaron caught the playful tone in Aramis's voice. He knew that he eventually would hear the story straight from Aramis. It was another test of patience from his teacher. Sir, is that your cousin? An older man slipped through the town gate. The gate that had opened without so much as a creak immediately closed behind him. The tall, gaunt man made his way slowly towards them. He limped slightly, favoring his right side. Aramis, walking much faster than his cousin, met the man more than halfway to the gate. Aaron stood and followed quickly, so he could be at Aramis's side when the two men began to speak.
Fred, is that really you?
The great Aramis Cragan.
Cousin Red extended his arms outward as if to say, "Here I am." The hair that had given Red his moniker was still thick, but tinted with gray.
"Yes, this is me in all my glory, cousin. The years have not been as kind to me as they have to you, I'm afraid."
Aramis kept his hands folded inside the sleeves of his robe, not expecting an embrace. "What's wrong with your leg, cousin?" Red shook his leg a little from side to side.
Just age pains, I guess. I get around well enough to do my job."
"What work is that?" Aramis noted that Red smacked his lips together before speaking. Red also smelled of drink, and it appeared that he had been wearing the same clothes for days.
"I work at the inn, washing dishes and bed linens mostly. I sometimes take over the kitchen for Talik when he's tending to his duties as innkeeper."
Red looked over at the younger Aaron.
"You got a servant now, Aramis, or just a special friend?"
Aaron's face reddened, but he managed to hold his tongue. Aramis realized long ago that a great number of people across the land did not especially like ironic advisors, even when they were family. The fact that Aramis had retired many years before meant little to Red. For some, the dislike was born out of fear, The monastic training of an erotic advisor often resulted in the development of certain talents that made many people uncomfortable. For others, it was a byproduct of jealousy. In the almost 300 years since the erotic advisors began their work in Cairn, many leaders had grown dependent on the group as counselors and diplomats. Red's attitude, however, was directly linked to what he considered his life's greatest failure. Red Carlson had at one time traveled to Thorn's Way, seeking to become an erotic advisor. But he had not even passed the initial test that would have gained him entry as a student of the erotic order, when his younger cousin Aramis was accepted into the order and eventually became an erotic advisor. It was a blow from which Red Carlson had never truly recovered. Aramis fully realized that help would not be readily provided to them by his cousin. He spoke carefully, not wishing to completely eliminate the chance of aid. "Red, this is Aaron. He's been my student for some time now." He changed the subject quickly. "And since you are here, you must have received my letter. We need access to the Olviarin Pass. Will you help us?" "How long has it been since we last saw each other, cousin?" "Red, I last saw you at your mother's funeral some 15 years ago. You refused to speak to me even then. I only knew you had moved to Avedon Hill because your sister Elidel still writes me every season. She still keeps tabs on everyone in our family." In spite of himself, a smile leaked onto Red's sour face. "Elidel is good at that, isn't she?" "Red, I thought time might have softened your views of me and what I've done with my life. I certainly hold no ill will towards you. We were even good friends when we were children." Red closed his eyes, either remembering something from his youth, or possibly making a decision about what to do next. He opened his eyes and smacked his lips together once more. "Fine, cousin. You win. I really just wanted to tell you to bugger off, but I guess I'm just too old for this. Being a complete ass isn't as easy as it used to be." Aaron, not knowing the history between Red and the Aaronic Order, couldn't help himself. "I doubt that. You seem to be pretty good at it."
"That's a good one, boy."
Aaron nearly responded to the reference at his age, but Aramis brought one of his hands into view and motioned for him to stop. Aramis hadn't turned from Red, still staring into his cousin's eyes. "Red, can you help us?"
"As I already told you, I wash dishes. Even if the town wasn't shut down, I don't have the pull it takes to get you access to the Olviarin Pass. Shut down. There's been a murder. Greta Platt worked at Avedon Manor. Good-looking girl, only a few years older than your boy, Aaron here."
"But why has this closed the town?" Cousin Red shrugged.
"The constables, they ruled out the only three merchants passing through town at the time, which means someone here must have killed the girl. So, no one is allowed to leave town."
Red looked back at the gate.
"I'm sure Cletus is sitting up in his roost right now watching me as we speak, making sure I don't hobble down the road."
He turned his back to Aramis.
"But even more important, Lord Avedon has closed the Olviarin Pass on both ends, as I understand it. Even if I could get you into the town, you can't use the pass."
"But again, why has Lord Avedon closed the entire town? Certainly, this harms your town's economy, especially the inn." Cousin Red stuck out his hand and waited until Aramis took it in his.
"Aramis, that is something you will have to ask Lord Avedon yourself. I wish you luck. I told Cletus about you. Maybe you can convince him to open the gate for you."
Aramis shook Red's hand. "We will come see you after we get settled at the inn." Cousin Red ended the handshake and bowed his head slightly towards Aaron.
"Young sir, knowing my cousin here, I'm sure we'll meet again. Good day to you."
Aaron returned the nod. Red limped slowly back to the town gate. "Should we follow him?" Aramis placed his hand on Aaron's arm so he wouldn't hurry over to their packs. "Let us give him a head start. Since we have no idea what Red's relationship is to this Cletus fellow, we should err on the side of caution and approach once Red has gone on his way." Aaron sat on the ground and snorted.
"Probably a good idea."
Aramis pulled out an apple and began cutting slices for them both to eat. He took a moment to study the Avedon Hill town walls. The oak trunks reached 50 feet in height in most areas, and the pitch-treated wood showed little wear even after 400 years. The wall was at least 6 tree trunks deep, and the beams tapered to sharpened points along the top of the wall. Interspersed between these wooden spikes were metal pikes and sharp metal wire jutting out in all directions, creating a deadly option for anyone foolish enough to attempt climbing over the wall. Aramis recalled that there were platforms along the inside of the wall and spy holes for archers. A short time later, the apple was gone, and the monk and his student stood before the town gates. Not seeing a tower or guard station, Aramis raised his voice and hoped he would be heard.
Cletus! Hello?
Eventually, a voice was heard on the other side of the wall.
What? Who's there?
Good morning, sir. We seek entry to your town. We would like to stay at your inn.
My town? My inn? My town is actually a few leagues south of here. You can go there if you like.
Aramis sighed. Cletus, sir, we would appreciate entry to Abaddon Hill.
What's the magic word?
Aaron began to brood.
Oh, for the love of Iberian.
Aramis, however, was unfazed.
Please, sir, may we enter? No, just go away.
Cletus, please come out and speak to us face to face. We have business with Lord Abaddon that you need to consider.
Business. Hold your horses, Sonny. I'll be down in a moment. Iberian's cackles and Treg's breath. Can't they just leave a man alone and finish his meal?
Business with Lord Abaddon. Aramis looked over to his young student. It turns out there may be an opportunity here to teach you something about the world. Enjoy yourself, Aaron. This could be fun. Aaron returned a glare that left little to Aramis's imagination and had nothing to do with fun. There you have it. I hope you enjoyed the first episode of Murder at Abaddon Hill. I want to once again thank Leanne Mabry for her time and considerable talent. In the future, there will be opportunities for guest voice work in Murder at Abaddon Hill. Most of these characters do not appear until after the first few episodes, so I wanted to give those interested a few chapters to see if this is something you want to get involved with. If you already know you are interested, feel free to send me an email at pgholyfield@murderatabaddonhill.com. I'd love to hear from you about the story and the podcast. You can reach me at pgholyfield@murderatabaddonhill.com, or you can reach me on Skype. My ID there is pgholyfield. And of course, you can post comments on the podcast website at pgholyfield.com. Once again, thanks for listening.
With the passing of podcaster Joe Murphy, people have been asking a lot of questions. What is leiomyosarcoma? Is there treatment for this? A friend of mine just got diagnosed with cancer. Now what do I do? That's where Give Us a Minute comes in. Give Us a Minute is a podcast of hope. We invite you to share on this podcast your own trials and tests with cancer, to share memories of Joe and other loved ones, and to join a community that, with the help of Mason Rocket, will work together to combat this disease and find a cure. All proceeds raised by this podcast will go to benefit the Joe Murphy Memorial Fund in its ongoing battle against leiomyosarcoma. Subscribe at www.joemurphymemorialfund.org and tell everyone you know. Give Us a Minute. For Joe, for all of us, for a cure.
Thank you. Hi, I'm your roving reporter, Jack Hosley, a.k.a. the Wonder Wolf, on the streets looking for people who have listened to Wonder Radio and getting their opinions. Excuse me, miss, what's your name?
I'm Megan.
And what do you like about Wonder Radio?
I love listening to Wonder Radio because it has such a wide variety of my favorite kinds of music, and they have really funny commercials, and I love the dramatized short stories.
There you have it, folks. Straight from Megan's mouth. We've got a wide variety of music, we have funny commercials, and dramatized short stories. So come on over to wanderradio.libsyn.com for radio content beyond the dial. Okay, here's your Tony box. Jeez.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill. Murder at Avedon Hill is a podcast novel written and performed by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin MacLeod through incompetech.com. This podcast is copyright 2007, P.G. Holyfield, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license.